Today is March 21st, 2024. Time is 3:03 PM Central. I now call to order the first quarterly meeting of the Finance and Audit Committee. The meeting's been being held in person at the Surplus Line Stamping Office of Texas at 1601 East Pflugerville Parkway, Suite 3301, Pflugerville, Texas, 78660. The Deputy Commissioner of the Financial Regulation Division, currently Jamie Walker of the Texas Department of Insurance, Walker Delegate, was notified of this committee meeting on March 12th, 2024, in accordance with Section 2C2 of the Surplus Lines Stamping Office Plan of Operation. Notice of this meeting was published in the Texas Register as required after 551 of the Texas Government Code on March 14th, 2024. Board members were notified of this meeting on February 26, 2024. The conference call number was provided to members of the public in the public meeting notice. Committee members Leslie Milvo and Jason Cables are present. A quorum of two or more committee members is present. Any other board members present? I see Ezekiel here, the chair, Garrett Sproles. And Nick, what was your last name, Nick?
Lawrence.
Nick Lawrence, so, and welcome to the board as we discussed during the orientation meeting. Also attending from the stamping office are Executive Director Greg Brandon, Director of Finance Don Olive, General Counsel Stan Strickland, is returning from 5 days at the NAIC, so I'm in a brain coma. So I Shalonda Stone of IT, Cheyenne Herrera of Operations, the Gomez. Executive Assistant. Are there any other members I haven't recognized?
Denise will come back.
Oh, Denise, Ms. Quito, the HR Director, who's present.
And Christian Robinson, the Senior Data Analyst.
Christian Robinson is here as well. Are there any representatives of the Texas Department of Insurance or the Controller of Public Accounts present or attending by telephone?
Yes. Barbara Lazard Hernandez with the Texas Department of Insurance.
Barbara, it's good to see you.
And John Carter. Texas Department of Insurance, Financial Regulation Division, representing Jamie Walker.
Always privileged to have the TDI partners at our meeting. The Texas Surplus Lines Association liaison attending in person or by telephone? Hearing none. All board members, stamping office employees, board liaisons, and state agency representatives should identify themselves when they speak. Please mute your phones and microphones when enough. As usual, we have some procedural announcements to get to before the actual agenda. We will not have public comments for this meeting. Representatives of state agencies and public members are welcome to listen and or record this committee meeting, but please refrain from asking questions of committee members during the actual meeting, objecting comments to the discussions. I was remiss in not recognizing our auditor friends. Can you please identify yourself?
Hi, my name is Marie Musalem. I'm a senior audit manager with Calhoun, Thompson & Mazza, and we completed the audit for the financial statements ending on December 31st, 2023.
Representative of Frost Bank as well.
Yes, Karina Diaz, work in the investments department with Alex.
For being here and your services to the stamping office, we appreciate it. We will not have public comments of this meeting, as I indicated. Members of the public or media, please place your phone on mute. State agency personnel may be asked questions about their agency's policies if those questions relate to an actual agenda item. Any trust activity or discussion are always prohibited at all stamping office functions. This includes the exchange of information concerning individual company rates, forms, coverages, market practices, claim settlement practices, expenses, or any other competitive aspect of a company, or for that matter, a broker's operation. We move to agenda item two. This is discussion and appropriate approval. The last meeting of this committee, December 13th, 2023, and the committee meeting. Everyone was provided a copy of the December 13th, 2023 committee meeting minutes. Are there any suggested revisions or corrections to the meeting minutes? Hearing none, is there any further discussion? No further discussion. Do we have a motion to approve the December 13th minutes?
Jason Cables will make said motion remotely.
Jason, Thank you, Jason, as always. And do we have a second? Jeff Klein will second. Any further discussion? Approve, say aye. Committee members that approve, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. The motion passes. Next, we moved on to agenda item three by Donna Aug, Director of Finance, Mary Salem with Calhoun, Thompson, and Matza. This is the discussion and any appropriate action for the 2023 annual financial audit review. At this time, I'll turn it over to Donna.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Per our plan of operations, section 2C5C, section 5 says the first regular meeting of the board in the calendar year is designated as the annual meeting during which the board must C, review the operating expenses, schedule of fees, and annual report for submission to the department's deputy commissioner of the Financial Regulation Division or the deputy commissioner's designee. Section 2B5 states the board must provide for an annual independent audit of the books and records of the stamping office, and the auditors must report directly to. That is what we're here for. Marie, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you. Marie Musalem from Calhoun, Thompson, and Matza. Audit has joined 2023. I have received two documents issued by my firm, as you can see in the packet, the first one being the audit wrap-up letter, and the second document was the audited financial statement. I'm going to go through the audit wrap-up letter now. So on page one of the wrap-up packet after the letter, we have the status of our audit. Next, on the next page, if you look at, thank you. We have completed our audit. The audit was conducted in accordance with auditing standards generally accepted in the USA. Our opinion dated February 29th, 2024 was modified. This is the best type of opinion you can get for an audit. All records and information that we requested were fully available to us. Management and other company personnel provided full cooperation. Thank you, Donna. On page two, on the next page, accounting policies and estimates. There were no changes in significant accounting policies and practices during the year. Also, management did not make any significant changes to the processes or significant assumptions used to develop significant accounting estimates in 2023. Corrected and uncorrected misstatements. There were three corrected misstatements as a result of our audit. The first adjustment was to reclassify securities maturing in greater than 1 year on December 31, 2023 as long-term investments. This is a recurring adjustment that we book every year since we've been doing the audit. And to break down the current investments and long-term investments. The second adjustment, also a recurring adjustment that we book every year, was to record the fiduciary fund activity for the year ending December 31. A third adjustment was to properly account for change in fair value of investments at year end. There were no uncorrected misstatements as a result of the audit. On page four, you have the internal controls over financial reporting. In planning and performing our audit, consider the company's internal control of financial reporting as a basis for designing our audit procedures, but not for the purpose of expressing an opinion on the effectiveness of internal controls. I'm going to explain the difference between control deficiency, significant deficiency, and material weakness, which you can find on page four. The control deficiency is a deficiency in internal control that exists when the design of control does not allow management or employees in the normal course of performing their assigned functions to prevent or detect incorrect misstatements on a timely basis. Significant deficiencies, a deficiency or combination of deficiencies in internal control that is less severe than material weakness, yet important enough to merit attention by those charged with governance. And material weakness, a deficiency or combination of deficiencies in internal control such that there is a reasonable possibility that misstatement of these financial statements will not be prevented or detected and corrected on a timely basis. In conjunction with our audits of the financial statements, we noted that we are witnesses. Page 5, the required communications to those charged with governance. There were no significant changes to the planned audit strategy or significant risks initially identified and previously commissioned. There were no disagreements with management during the audit. We are not aware of any instances where management consulted with other independent accountants during the year. We do not note any instances of fraud during the audit. We encountered no significant difficulties during the audit. We requested and received a representation letter from management. Management has provided it for you. There were no other issues arising from the audit that we considered significant and relevant to those charged with governance. Lastly, on page 7 of the wrap-up packet, the independence communications or engagement letter dated September 22, 2023 describes our responsibilities in accordance with professional standards and certain regulatory authorities with regard to independence. This letter also stipulates the responsibilities of the company with respect to independence as agreed to by the company. Please refer to that letter for information. We already have discussed the three audit adjustments, so I was not going to go over the financial statement. We've already seen these numbers included in the audit report. So unless someone has a question, that concludes my presentation.
I had a question. With the three adjustments that you made, did either any of them constitute either a significant deficiency or a control deficiency?
No, maybe not.
Thank you.
Questions?
Any questions for Donna, Ms. Massoum? Well, do you have a recommendation for a motion on the report?
I do. Consistent with this presentation and this committee's charter, I recommend that the Finance and Audit Committee accept the 2023 annual financial audit review as presented and recommend it to the full board for consideration and submission to the TDI in accordance with sections 2B5 and 2C5C of the Stamping Office Plan of Operation.
Is there a motion that this committee accept the 2023 annual financial audit review as presented and recommended to the full board for consideration and submission to the Texas Department of Insurance in accordance with sections 2B5 and 2C5C of the Stamping Office Plan of Operation. Is there a motion?
This is Leslie. I so move.
Is there a second?
Jason Cables remotely will move for a second.
Leslie and Jason, is there any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Three ayes. Any opposed? No committee members will vote. The ayes have it and the motion passed. Donna will present the next item, agenda item 4, discussion and appropriate action on 2024 finance year to date and an update. Thank you, Donna.
Okay. So we are presenting through February of this year and discussing February 1st. Our stamping fees were $27,000 under what we had budgeted for, roughly 6%. Year to date, we were over what we had budgeted for fees, over a little over $47,000 or 4%. The investment income was over what we predicted for about $14,000 or 19%. And year to date, we were over almost $38,000, 6%. So our investments had performed better than we had projected. Total operating expenses were under budget for February, almost $108,000 or 16%, and under $896,000 or 37% for the year. Breaking those down into categories, salaries and benefits were under budget $15,000 or $61,600 for the month, and $46,000 or $829,000 for year to date. We are running at 5 heads lower than what we budgeted for personnel. And then our annual pension plan funding that was approved in our budget last year was put into January, and we have as yet spent that. So we are under budget by that amount as well. Professional services were under budget 37% or $16,000 for February due to the timing of legal and audit invoices versus the months that we had budgeted those for. And this category was under budget 2% or $2,800 for the year. Conference and education was under budget nearly 100% or $6,900 for February and 48% or $5,400 for the year due to, again, timing for budgeted conferences. Travel and entertainment were under budget 31% or $985 for the month and 59% or $3,700 for the year. Occupancy and operating expenses were under budget $14,500 or 28% for the month and under almost $23,000 or 23% for the year. The categories that contributed to the savings versus budget were computer, equipment, software, and printing. G&A, general and administrative expenses, were under budget $4,500 or 3% for February and under budget $10,500 or 3% for the year. Our contingency expense, which we are required to include as a budget at 0.5% of operating expenses, was not used, and that resulted in a savings of $3,300 and $12,000 for the year. We had $204,840 in operating loss for February and $240,090 loss for the year. As you can see, we had budgeted for $110,800 loss for February and $1.2 million loss for year to date. Change in investment value was a decrease of approximately $189,000 for February, and year to date was $97,000, almost $700. Any questions?
The change in the investment value, is that just due to market conditions? And so everything else was under budget, but that's the one loss that was, I mean, contributing to why the loss is more than was budgeted for. Is that correct?
Correct. And that, again, is not a cash outlay.
Right.
Yes. Good question. Anything else?
If not, Ms. Aug, do you have a recommendation to this committee regarding the 2024 finance year to update?
I do not.
Thank you. Any questions before I move on, or input from anyone? Jason, do you have any questions so far?
I do not. Thank you.
Thanks for your time today. Agenda item 5, also by Donna, Director of Finance, is a discussion and any appropriate action on the reserve balance review. So Donna, kicking it back to you.
Okay. So per our plan of operations, section 2B7, point A says the budget must take into account unknown and unanticipated expenses as may reasonably occur and make provisions for such expenses under prudent business practice. Projected reserves, except for funds for asset replacement, must not exceed 2 times the average of audited operating expenses for the 5-year period immediately preceding the budget year. And point B, if the reserve balance is projected to exceed the limit under subsection B7A of this section in the upcoming year, within 30 days after the annual meeting, the board must submit a written plan for reducing the amount of the actual reserves within a reasonable time given the then existing market conditions to the department's deputy commissioner of the Financial Regulation Division or the deputy commissioner's designee. So normally my second slide of my regular presentations are what the current fund balance is at. But I need to give you a little background here since we've completed our audit for last year. And so that changes what our current maximum is. So you'll see because the maximum is based on a 5-year average, we've got years 19 through now our audited 23, which brings that 2 times that 5-year average to $12,537,946. That is what our new maximum is supposed to be for 2024. At the end of our audit, our fund balance ended the year and then began January 1st at $32,687,513. So we started the year being over that maximum by $20 million, almost $150,000. Any questions on how that's derived? Any other questions?
Donna, this is Jeff. Just to refresh my recollection, what was that $20,149,000 figure? What was the comparative figure a year ago? Do you know offhand? In other words, how much has that decreased already?
Give me one.
The stamping fee changed during part of the year, so I imagine it's already starting.
It was January 1, so if this is the state of January 1, then
it's not yet.
The stamping fee,
it wouldn't have had an effect yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
So we went into 22. Sorry, we went into 23 with a net position of 29,178. Our unrestricted net position at the beginning of last year was 32, very close, 32,687.
Is that the excess or was that the balance?
I'm sorry, I misspoke. What I was saying at the beginning was correct. 29,178 was the balance, not the excess.
So that's dropped from 29 to 20.
It's gone up from 29 to 32.
We added $3.5 million net profit last year. Okay. So instead of losing money as we had hoped and budgeted, we did to it. So
I got it. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So everyone's clear on what our new maximum is, how we derived that, and how much money we need to work off in a reasonable time period, which Christian will open to us later. So for February, repeating a few numbers, we went into it, our balance at 32,687. Through February, we have had a loss of 240,000. So as of the end of February, our fund balance is 32,447. So that is in excess of our new max of 12.5 million, of almost $20 million. So we're over that maximum by about $20 million currently. Any questions on that?
And I think you answered this previously. This is Garrett. The 240,000 net loss at this point, that primarily from the fair market investment value. So, and it is an extremely small sample size given that we're just through February.
Exactly. Plus, we have to remember too that every month we have expenses that are non-cash of amortization and depreciation. So,
you done?
You're welcome.
Anything else on this report?
No.
On this agenda, item 5, are there any other questions or further discussion on this item from any committee members? Zog, do you have a recommendation at this time regarding the stamping office reserve balance review that you just educated me on?
Everybody's favorite topic, I think. Consistent with this presentation and this committee's charter, I recommend that this committee make a recommendation to the board for reducing the amount of the actual reserves of the stamping office in accordance with the section 2B7B of the stamping office plan of operation.
Need a motion from this committee to make a recommendation to the full board consistent with this presentation for reducing the amount of the actual reserves of the stamping office in accordance with section 2B7E of the stamping office plan of operation. Do I have a motion with respect to this recommendation?
Jason Cables remotely will make that motion.
Leslie Melvo, remote, in person, seconded.
Any further discussion?
Sorry, just to make sure I'm understanding, this motion is just that we are trying to reduce the stamping fee, but it's not going to additional mechanics beyond what we have already done with the reduction of the, or reducing the fund balance rather than, but not additional mechanics beyond what we've previously done. Is that correct?
No further technical change.
Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Jason says aye remotely. Leslie, aye in person. Jeff Klein, aye. The ayes have it and the motion passes. We're moving on to the next agenda item, which is item 6, investment and cash management policy annual review, presented both by Donna Ogg, Director of Finance, and Felina Diaz, who we welcome here today from Frost Bank, a sponsor of the San Antonio Spurs. This time off. The minutes will reflect that. I'll turn the floor over to Donna.
Okay. So one of the requirements at this annual meeting is to review the investment and cash management policy. And you'll see what's being displayed is the latest version of our investment and cash management policy from mid-2017. It has not changed and it has served us well. And you'll see after that, next slide, please. The purpose and objectives of that, of this plan, you'll see the investment restrictions. They have to be publicly traded, U.S. dollars. Then it also gives percentages that we must maintain. It goes on to talk about fixed income securities, equities, and other investments. So that acceptable, I think the next slide. Acceptable portfolio investments gives the minimum and maximum and target of what they'd like to see our portfolio invested in: CDs, fixed income securities, equities, and other things. So that's what our guidelines are. A target would be a goal, but we've got to stay minimum and maximum there. And it goes on to talk about possibilities and exceptions. So at this point, I am going to turn it over to Karina for specifics.
So what I've prepared today is just a very short overview. As Donna said, there are investment restrictions that we follow. We have met these. All investments are publicly traded. All are U.S. dollar denominations, no foreign currencies. Currently, there are no voting securities of corporations that are owned. No more than 10% of portfolio is invested in any one corporation, and no more than 25% of the portfolio is invested in any one industry. What is the portfolio made up of? We have certificates of deposit, CDs, U.S. Treasury bills and Treasury notes, both taxable domestic corporate fixed income securities and taxable domestic fixed income owned through open-ended mutual funds. The first three, the certificates of deposits, treasuries, and corporate bonds, we purchase those on a laddered approach where funds become available at least every month. There are funds that become available, principal that is available to you all to tap into if principal were to be needed. And right now we're purchasing fixed income out through late 2026, early 2027. The current weightings of the portfolio are there. 44% CDs, 29% U.S. Treasury bills and notes, 10% corporate bonds, and 17% to the open-ended mutual fund that holds domestic fixed income as well. So no equity exposure in this. Brings me to my next slide. I mentioned the laddered approach that we take to the fixed income individual holdings that we hold. With that, we are producing income over $1 million for the next 12 months looking forward. Is available, it automatically transfers to the operating account as interest income. We also have the principal from the laddered fixed incomes that we've purchased over time that is also available to dip into. I know plans are changing for the operating account. So these are points where we can access the funds. So over the next 12 months, we have about $10 million worth of principal that can be tapped into if funds were to be needed.
Let me just interject real quick just to add a little color to that. So every month when we do have one or more maturities, Alex will call me and say, we have this amount, can we do? Do you need the money? And in the past, I was usually having him transfer money out because we had too much. I'm required to keep 90 days of CapEx in our operating account. And last year, that was about $1.5 million. Right now, as of 2 months, it's about $1.8 million. But given that our fee has just been reduced and we expect to bring in a lot less income, we're at, as of today, a little over $2.2 million in the operating. So I'm holding on to that in that account so that I can cover expenses because we do expect the revenue to go down. So Alex won't be hearing from me quite as often to say, get some of this money out of here. When we get to the point where our operating account can no longer sustain our monthly expenses, when Alex calls and says, we've got this amount of maturities, that's when we'll say, please put that into our operating so that we can fund our operation. So that's ultimately how the plan will work. Once we get this reserved out.
So far, we've been just reinvesting the principal at the end of the ladder. When this does take place, we'll cut some of the principal, but we'll still have sufficient to put at the end of the ladder and continue to accumulate that interest and lock in the current interest rates that we are seeing. The approach that we take, if you want to go to the next slide, with the purchases, like I said, we're purchasing into late 2026, early 2027. So we're going past 2 year maturities at this point, 2-3 years, so that we can lock in the current interest rates that we see. With this slide, I kind of prepared it with the treasury yield, both short term and a little bit longer term. Where we're purchasing is more so the two year and 3 year columns there. And what we really wanted to highlight was we're purchasing for the long term. We're not purchasing to take advantage of the highest yield because right now that's really 6 months and lower. With the anticipation of the Federal Reserve decreasing interest rates in sometime in the soon future, when that will be, we don't entirely know. So that's why we continue to purchase on a laddered approach, long term, not trying to time the interest rates. And with that, obviously, we'll hold on to these interest rates for a longer time. In November, you'll see that there was a drop from the interest rates. That's when the Federal Reserve first said that they would be holding the federal funds rate at where it was, as opposed to increasing it. So in the 2 month course, we saw 0.7% change in those rates. It's bounced back a little bit because inflation hasn't cooled down as much as they thought it has. And that's kind of the game we're playing at this point. When will the Federal Reserve begin to cut those rates? And to the next one, we really don't know. Every month, it's a different story, a different title, a different opinion. Firms think different things at this point. And even the Federal Reserve is kind of contradicting what they say. Yesterday, they decided that they would be holding again, but they said that they anticipate 3 cuts before the end of the year. They've said this continuously, but we're now into March of this year. And they, even with that sentiment, they said that inflation has not cooled sufficiently. So they are still going to probably be holding for a bit longer, but we'll see. obviously, that's why we purchase on a longer term basis and not try to take advantage of the current yields. Any questions?
Ms. Diaz, on one of your earlier slides, you showed the mix of investments.
Yes.
They appear to be domestic. We had a question maybe a year or so ago. I imagine the answer is the same. With all the turmoil on the international markets, the SLTX doesn't have any exposure to international stock or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. All domestic.
With that, and thank you for your presentation, is there any discussion or questions for Donna Ogg regarding the annual review of the investment cash management policy? Ms. Ogg, do you have a recommendation regarding this annual review of the investment and cash management policy?
I do. Consistent with this review and this committee's charter, I recommend that this committee make a recommendation to the board that no revisions be made to the Stamping Office investment and cash management policy in Section 2BC of the Stamping Office Plan of Operation.
Accordingly, we would need a motion that this committee recommend to the full board, consistent with the presentation by Donna and Ms. Diaz, that no revisions be made to the Stamping Office investment and cash management policy in accordance with the plan of operations, section 2B as in boy 6. Do I have a motion?
This is Leslie. I so move.
Leslie again. Do we have a second?
Jason Cables will second.
Thank you, Jason. Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye, please.
Aye.
Aye. I'm Jason remotely. Leslie and Jeff present. All opposed, say no. No one left. The ayes have it. Thank you, Ms. Ogg.
You're welcome. Thank you, Karina, for joining.
This is a long agenda today. Agenda item 7, perhaps the most interesting portion, discussion and appropriate action, the annual stamping fee analysis. Craig Brandon, Executive Director, Cheyenne Herrera, Director of Operations, Christian Robinson, Senior Data Analyst, will present this item. Turn it over to you, Craig.
Okay.
I'll tell you what, I'll let
Cheyenne start. We'll go back the other way. So Greg will be kicking off the discussion, but before Christian goes into his analysis, I wanted to give you a background on Christian, right? You get to see us and hear about us and know us a lot, but only once a year do you get to see Christian's face. So a little background on him. He began working here in 2017 as a policy analyst. He worked as a financial analyst before we promoted him to a data analyst in 2019. The data analyst really kind of encompasses kind of overseeing the financial analysis and all the other things data. He was promoted to a senior data analyst earlier this year, so as of January 1st of this year, so it's pretty fresh. He does have a background in mathematics and analytics and has a bachelor's degree in economics and mathematics from UT Austin. He is currently working toward a master's degree in analytics from Georgia Tech. He owns all things data and analytics for the Stamping Office and handles most internal and external data requests, including making graphical representations. So it's not just numbers floating around everywhere. He does make some pretty pictures and charts as well. He is also working on the automation of many of our manual processes or tasks. So he does a lot of things that are outside data as well. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Greg before we get back around to Christian.
Okay. Thanks. You're right. This is an interesting topic to discuss. But this year it'll be pretty easy since we just changed our. But still, Christian's done an exceptional amount of effort kind of putting together the viewpoint on what our stamping fee looks like. And it, as you can imagine, our stamping fee is really the only way that we can adjust our reserve balance. And so that is the only knob we have to pull. So all I'm really going to do is point out on these first couple of slides, plan of operations section 1B7C requires that we go over the stamping fee annually and submit to the deputy commissioner within 30 days of this meeting, whether or not the recommendation is to raise the fee, lower the fee, or take no action. And then on the next slide, you can see it is related somewhat to the fund balance. So we talked a lot about fund balance today, and we talk a lot about the fund balance every meeting. And you can see that there's a couple of things regarding the undesignated fund balance. Right? The budget must take into account unknown and unanticipated expenses as may reasonably occur. So when I say the plan of operation requires us to be
Under budget?
That is why. So you may recall, well, most of you worked on this for a time. When Donna and I arrived, that number was 5%. So we were virtually guaranteed to be at least 5% under budget at all times. Now we changed that to 0.5%, what, probably 3 years ago?
This is our third.
Give or take. So we're not as under budget as we historically have been. But historically, this organization is always under budget. And you can see 1B talks specifically to the reserve balance. If the reserve balance is projected to exceed the limit, then within 30 days, we have to write us a plan. And now that plan, as I mentioned, the only real way that we can affect our reserve balance is to change our income and spend it. So that's how all of this adds up. So the recommendation is going to be a bit odd, right? We're going to say we need a plan to reduce the reserve balance, and the plan is to continue to follow the plan that we're already on because we just started it in January. So it's important that everybody understands that. And then also, there is no timeline on getting that reserve balance down. It just simply says within a reasonable time. So assuming the deputy commissioner agrees with our plan, and since the plan is to continue to doing that reasonable time that Christian will outline in his slide deck is already accepted and agreed to. So with that, Christian, I will hand it over to you and let you work your magic on all these.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you, Cheyenne, and thank you all for being here today. I want to recognize first that I am last and I have a lot of math, so I will be as succinct as possible. I know a lot of you have been here a lot today. So first, I want to give some historical context to the stamping fee rate. So this is every rate that we've had in our organization's history. As you can tell, we've changed a lot. Some for not very long and some for still not very long, but a little bit longer. the longest that we've had a consistent stamping fee rate was from 2007 to 2016, when we had a 0.06% rate. And on average, we've changed a rate every 3.6 years in our history. So we obviously recognize that we don't want to keep doing that. Because of the burden that it places on the industry, we want to make sure that we set a rate that's stable for the long term. The current stamping fee rate, as you guys know, is 0.04%. That came into effect 1/1 of this year, and that's the lowest stamping fee rate that we've had in our history. I know a lot of these numbers Donna already presented, but I want to reiterate where we are currently on our designated fund balance as of the end of 2023. And I know I have a note there that these are unaudited for 2023, but as of the presentation 30 minutes ago, they are now audited. So, so the current undesignated fund balance at the end of 2023 was at 32.7 million, which is about $20.5 million above what the maximum threshold is currently. That's about 1.6 million above differences above where we were at the end of last year. Of course, the new stamping fee rate didn't come into effect until 1/1 of this year. So when I have this discussion next year, we'll expect to see that difference finally start to come down and our actual fund balance start to converge on what the maximum is. Of course, when we set stamping fee rate, the goal is to find what the break-even rate is and set the stamping fee rate at that break-even rate. And so historically, that rate is, over the last 3 years, it's been 0.063%. That holds when you look past the last 3 years too. The break-even rate has always been somewhere around 0.06, 0.065, 0.07% within that range. The stamping fee rate over the last 3 years has been 0.075%. And what I have there as the realized rate over the last 3 years is 0.078%. I know I went over this last year, but just to reiterate, the Realized rate is just simply our stamping fee revenue divided by total premium. The reason that that is different than the actual stamping fee rate is the stamping fee rate is applied based off of when a transaction is effective, not when it's reported to us. So just as an example, our current stamping fee rate, again, effective 1-1 of this year, we're still getting transactions from 2023. So those 2023 transactions have a 0.075% stamping fee rate on it. It's the 2024 ones that will have the updated stamping fee rate. And over time, those should converge on one another as essentially all of the transactions that we process in a year as the existing stamping fee rate. So we should see those two converge the longer that we get from a stamping fee rate change. This is just another way of showing that same point. So this is I looked at every stamping fee rate change that we had and when do we start to see the majority of our transactions have the existing stamping fee rate applied to it. So as you can see, in the first month that we've had any stamping fee rate change, on average, only about 18% of those transactions actually have the new stamping fee rate applied to it. And it takes typically about 6 months to a year before we really see any impact from any stamping fee rate change. So this year, we have seen a little bit higher than average, but still, so far in March, we have almost 90% of our transactions in March have the new stamping fee rate applied to it, but we wouldn't expect to see the full impact of the new rate until later this year. This slide is just copied and pasted from my presentation last year. It showed the 10-year projections for the maximum fund balance and what we'd expect the actual balance to be. That yellow line is where we landed on the 0.04% stamping fee rate. So at the time, the timeline that we presented was that we'd expect those to meet around 2027 to 2028. I've looked back at the projections that I made last year, and the reason that I didn't update them was so far, since I made those projections, what we've actually realized is 0.9% different from what I projected, which I don't expect it to be that every year, but just to say that there is no reason I saw for me to update those projections in any way. What we've experienced is kind of what we've expected. So at this point, that timeline that we showed last year is still what we expect.
And these projections take into account anticipated changes in premium volume as well. It's not just taking current numbers and doing the fee and expenses, correct? Correct.
Yeah. And that's the same can be said for expenses. And I will say, when you look at any given year, I don't want anybody to interpret that as that's exactly what we expect to see during that given year. When you look at a long time horizon, there's so much variability, especially the further you get. So this is what we'd expect to see over 10 years averaged for each year. So I just want to make sure we're clear on that. Typically, when we've had the stamping fee rate discussion in the past, we focused on revenue, which is why we have the stamping fee rate. There's obviously another end to that equation. So I want to address the expenses portion too, especially since the expenses are really have a larger impact than our revenue on our ability to converge on the maximum fund balance, because the expenses not only impact our revenue, but they also impact the maximum balance, since that's the only part of that function. So one way that we decided to show that was to look at how much it costs SLTX to process a filing every year versus how much money we actually got for every filing. So as you can see, from 2001 through 2016, the amount that it costs SLTX to process a single filing remained relatively level. It stayed between $3 and $4 per filing over that period of time. While the revenue per filing bounced around a lot during that time period. And then you can see around 2016 when it really starts to take off. And ideally, you'd want those two lines to mirror one another as the amount that we get per filing increases significantly. You want the expenses to do the same in order to break even. And then we had a 7-year time period where premiums increased so significantly that proved to be a hard number to chase. And 1/1/21 is when we made our initial stamping period reduction. So you start to see some convergence there. And then it wasn't until so far this year that our expenses per transaction finally exceeded the amount that we were bringing in per transaction. We'd expect to see that over the next handful of years as we attempt to converge back to where the maximum. Also wanted to give some context to when we talk about expenses, what that is typically made up of. So you can see the biggest driver of expenses every year is salaries and benefits. That's always been the case in our stamping fee history or stamping office history. This is taking data back from 2001. So since that point, on average, a little over 50% of our expenses are salaries and benefits. And then you have general and administrative expenses at around 20%, operating and occupancy expenses and professional services, both on average around 15% of our total expenses, and education and travel is negligible for the most part. Professional services is really the only one that's had any kind of variability. There's a couple of notable outliers where professional services were higher for a given year than most years. But the most recent example is 2019. So it's been a while since that's the case. And as a general rule, salaries and benefits has always been the biggest driver of the amount of money that we spend as an organization.